Hi everyone, thank you for tuning in to Southeast City Church. This Sunday, May 24th, we're going to be doing something a little bit different this Sunday. Instead of me going live, we're going to present to you a sermon from a good friend of ours, Trevor Seeth. If you don't know Trevor is the Ontario Regional Director for C2C Collective, formerly known as C2C Network, and they are a Canadian church planting network that by now has planted well over 100 churches with 30 plus different denominations. And we are happy to call C2C Collective our network. They're the church planting network that Southeast City Church is a part of. And Trevor is my friend, Trevor is my coach, Trevor is my advisor. And he has actually been with Southeast City Church since the very beginning. He was with Southeast City Church when it was just an idea, a dream in Diana and I's head. We met with him repeatedly for a year before we were assessed by C2C in Montreal. So he's been with us since before the very beginning. And for a while now, we've been wanting to get him to come and preach at our church, but it's just never worked out. The schedules have never synced. And so now that travel and accommodations are not an issue, I invited Trevor to record a sermon for us, and he agreed. So Trevor, thank you, and Southeast City Church family and whoever else is watching, I hope that this sermon is a blessing to you and ministers to your heart in this season. So we're going to sing a couple of songs together, and then Trevor is going to preach for us. Enjoy.
Well, good morning, Southeast City Church. This is kind of a strange way to meet you, but I'm glad to be able to share from God's Word with you this morning. Really thankful for the invitation. I am a huge fan, by the way, of Southeast City Church. Huge fan of your growing relationship with your friends, with the members of your community who are also at Russell Gardens and all that God's been doing there. Yeah, just excited for you and for what God is doing among you and what he is doing and will do through you. So just really, really thankful and look forward to meeting you in person. It's been way too long. As you probably know, I live in Toronto and visit regularly in Ottawa, but not very regularly on weekends. I'm an elder in a church here called Trinity Grace Church in Toronto. And so normally that's where I'm hanging out on Sundays, but this is great. Just so glad to be with you. The passage that I want to look at with you this morning is a difficult one in some ways. I mentioned that to someone else this week and they said, well, what's difficult about it? Jesus' teaching in this passage in Matthew chapter 10 is really very direct and clear, and maybe that's part of what makes it difficult. I think it was Mark Twain who said something like, it's not the parts of the Bible that I find confusing that give me the greatest difficulty, it's the parts of the Bible that are really clear that give me the greatest difficulty, and that's one. This is one of those kinds of passages. It's a passage that includes reference to hell. It's a passage that includes Jesus calling us to take up our cross and be willing to lose our lives for him. So it's a difficult passage in that sort of way. And maybe just to get started, I'll read it for you. This is Matthew chapter 10, beginning in verse 26, and I'm going to read through to verse 39. So have no fear of them. Jesus is speaking about people who would oppose his 12 apostles as he sent them out. And I'll talk more about that later. But he tells them, you're going to face opposition. People will drag you into court. People will betray you even to death. And then he says this, have no fear of them. For nothing is covered that will not be revealed or hidden that will not be known. What I tell you in the dark, say in the light. What you hear whispered, proclaim on the housetops. And do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather, fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? And not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father. But even the hairs on your head are all numbered. Fear not, therefore. You are of more value than many sparrows. So everyone who acknowledges me before men, I also will acknowledge before my Father who is in heaven. But whoever denies me before men, I also will deny before my Father who is in heaven. Do not think that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I have not come to bring peace, but a sword. I have come to set a man against his father, and a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a person's enemies will be those of his own household. Whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. Well, I want to get back to that passage in a moment, but first of all, let me just ask you a question. What would you do if you had to make fearful followers continue on, follow through on a dangerous mission? How would you speak to people when you need them to do something really dangerous, really scary, and you can see that you're kind of losing them? You can see them beginning to get afraid. One of my favorite scenes in any movie, and certainly my favorite scene in the movie Braveheart, is Mel Gibson, playing William Wallace, confronted by this kind of a problem. If you've seen the movie, you'll know what I'm talking about, but let me just set it up for anyone who hasn't seen the movie. A number of sort of just everyday people, Scots, have gathered to defend their freedom against the British Army. And they're just sort of regular people. And they're organized by the lords of Scotland, the landowners of Scotland, but they themselves are farmers and just regular kinds of people. And they've all gathered as sort of a ragtag army to defend their freedom against the British. And in the beginning of the scene, the British army is just beginning to crest over a hill in the distance and come towards these assembled Scot farmers. And there are a lot of British soldiers showing up. In fact, it's an overwhelming majority. They're outnumbered greatly, these poor Scottish farmers. And they begin to become afraid. And they start to talk amongst each other. This isn't worth it. What are we doing here? We could lose our lives. And then Mel Gibson, William Wallace, shows up. This is the part of the scene movie where he's got half of his face painted blue. And he shows up with some of his sort of band of men. And he recognizes that, you know, the Scottish farmers who've shown up are all pretty afraid. And some of them seem to be kind of walking away. And first of all, he acknowledges, listen, I recognize you're free, but I wonder, what are you going to do with your freedom? Will you fight? He asks them. And one of the more bold farmers who's gathered there that day says, no, we're not going to fight. We're going to go home and we're going to live. And then famously, William Wallace, Mel Gibson, says this, aye, fight and you might die. Flee, and you will live for a while. And dying in your beds many years from now, would you not trade every day from that day to this for one chance, just one chance to come back here and tell them that they may take our lives, but they can never take our freedom? And if you've seen the movie, he just says, our freedom! And he rides with his horse in front of all these Scottish farmers, and they're all just like, Mel Gibson, we love you. And suddenly this group that was afraid is galvanized and ready to face a genuinely life and death situation. and risk their lives for the sake of freedom in Scotland. Well, in Matthew chapter 10, in the passage that I've just read, Jesus is facing that kind of a situation. He's appointed his 12 apostles to a really exciting task. He's told them to go and proclaim, and this is from Matthew chapter 10, verse 7, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. God is on the move. God is breaking into history, and he's going to set up his kingdom here on earth. So that's an exciting message. What's more, he's given them authority to perform miracles. He tells them in verse 8, heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse lepers, cast out demons. So this is an exciting assignment that Jesus is giving his 12 apostles. But in addition to that, it's a really dangerous assignment. Listen to what he says in verse 16. He says, behold, I am sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Well, no one wants to be a sheep surrounded by wolves. That is a dangerous, dangerous situation. He says in verse 17, men will deliver you over to courts and flog you. They'll whip you in their synagogues. You will be dragged before governors and kings for my sake to bear witness before them and the Gentiles. They will deliver you over. You're going to get arrested. Do not be anxious, he says. And then he goes on in verse 21 of Matthew chapter 10 to say, brother will deliver brother over to death, and father his child, and children will rise against parents and have them put to death, and so on and so forth. So, you know, Jesus is giving his 12 apostles an exciting assignment to declare that the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of God, is here, and he's given them divine authority to perform miracles in his name. But he's also been really realistic about the risks. And in Matthew chapter 10, he's not just speaking about the risks that his 12 apostles would face immediately when they were completing this particular assignment. He's talking about what's going to happen to his followers even after he's gone, the way that they are going to be treated and actually mistreated, beaten, falsely accused, and even killed for being his followers. And really, by this point in Jesus, you know, commissioning his apostles, I would expect they're pretty afraid. I mean, this is not a locker room rally talk that a coach would give to get his team out on the ice to face, you know, their arch rivals or something. He's talking about significant risks. And I could imagine his disciples, you know, becoming a little bit not confident, right? They're maybe looking at the ground, they're looking at each other, they're wondering what in the world is going on. And so Jesus, a little bit like William Wallace, Mel Gibson in that famous scene from Braveheart, is confronted by followers who are fearful about their assignment. They were excited about it at first, but I suspect by the time you get to verse 26, the verse that I read for you earlier, where Jesus says, so have no fear of them, it's pretty obvious it's because they're afraid. So what does Jesus say to help his followers become fearless and become focused so that they can go forward? And what does this have to say to us? Because this is a fearful time for us in Canada and for people all over the world. We're not only afraid for our physical health, and that's genuine. We're not only fearful for individuals we may know who are vulnerable or perhaps even infected with COVID-19. We're also fearful about the economy, about our jobs, about what this means for charities who support some of the most vulnerable people in our city. We're thinking globally, some of us, about countries, whole countries that are really poor and really dependent on the help that comes from charities who themselves rely on support from donors. So there's a lot to be concerned about at this time. So Jesus speaks to his 12 apostles for sure at a time when they're afraid, but he's also speaking to us. He's speaking to us particularly if we're going to step out and be witnesses for him, if we're going to speak about the fact that Jesus is king of a kingdom. if we're going to be ones who share the good news about Jesus and salvation that's available through him alone, this is especially for us. And it also is the kind of teaching that addresses any of us who are afraid. It's really interesting for me how Jesus starts this off. He says this, and I'm just going to read it again. "So have no fear of them, for nothing is covered that will not be revealed or hidden that will not be known. What I tell you in the dark, say in the light. What you hear whispered, proclaim on the housetops. And do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather, fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell." I don't know about you, but that would not be the first thing that I might say to somebody who's already afraid. What is Jesus essentially saying? Well, I think we can say a few things. First of all, he's saying that history is progressing towards a known conclusion. And that is a reassurance for anyone who trusts in God. Events in history, events in our lives aren't random. They're part of God's plan working out towards a known conclusion. God's authority, God's righteousness, God's goodness is going to be established. It will win out in the end. I love the line from Revelation 21 where Jesus says, "Behold, I am making all things new." That's what we look forward to. And that's part of what Jesus is saying. He's saying, nothing is hidden that won't be revealed. Things that are whispered now, things that seem secrets now. And he would be speaking about the teaching about who he is and about his kingdom. These things that are very quiet and whispered now are going to be amplified. He says these are the things that will be shouted from the rooftop. So history is progressing and God is going to do justice in the end. Those who have not been faithful to God, those who are wicked and evil, are ultimately going to be punished, Jesus says. But he doesn't just say, hey, don't worry because all those people who are against you are going to get what's coming to them. He says, do not fear them, rather fear him who can destroy both body and soul in hell. So Jesus is telling his apostles, be afraid of God above any of the other concerns that you might have in life. That's a kind of a curious thing for Jesus to say. And I think it's really important that he starts that way. Let me just suggest an analogy here. We all can picture that scene where a family is on a long road trip and they're all kind of cooped up in a car and they're all tired and frustrated and, you know, the drive's been a long drive. And the kids in the back are starting to fight with each other. They're starting to have problems in the back seat and they're complaining about who crossed over whose space and who looked at who in the wrong way and who's taking too much time with something or not passing a snack over to the other one. We have four kids in our family, by the way, and have done a lot of road trips, so we know something about this. But the next step in that classic kind of scene with the kids fighting in the back seat is when mom or dad looks in the rearview mirror and says, if you think you've got something to complain about now, just wait until I stop this car and come back there. I'll give you something to complain about. I'll give you something to be afraid about. And it's almost like Jesus is saying that. You think you have a fear about men and women who can do things to you, drag you into court, even kill you? That is not your biggest concern, Jesus is saying. Your biggest concern, your biggest fear, in a sense, ought to be about your relationship with God. Your biggest concern is not the difficulties of your life today, as real as they are, as difficult as they might be. To put this in our context, our greatest concerns, even now during COVID-19, are not the concerns of this moment. They're not about our bank accounts, our credit cards, our job security, our physical health. The biggest question of life is how can I stand before the God who made me once history has run its course, once everything has been revealed, and I stand before God, how am I going to stand before him? And so Jesus kind of stirs up that sense of question, that fear. And it's really interesting what Jesus says next. He says in verse 29, "Are not two sparrows sold for a penny, and not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father? But even the hairs on your head are all numbered. Fear not, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows." So first of all, Jesus says, keep your eye on the biggest question of life, which is, how will I stand before a righteous God at the end of all things, the one who has the authority to destroy both body and soul in hell, Jesus says. And then he says, the next thing you need to know is that that God who made you, loves you, and he knows the circumstances of your life, and he's concerned about the details of your life, even the hairs. And Jesus says, even all the hairs on your head are numbered. On Tuesday morning, super early this week, 2 a.m., we put down our family dog. Leo was 15 years old. He had been blind for a couple of years. And on Monday, he started having really serious difficulties breathing. His trachea had collapsed. And we took him to the vet, Julie, and our kids took him to the vet once and kind of learned the diagnosis. And we tried to bring him home and give him some drugs and help him out, but that wasn't working. And so in the middle of the night, 2 a.m. on Tuesday, we were back at the veterinary hospital making that difficult choice to put him down. And then I came across this verse and was thinking, isn't it amazing that this dog, one of millions of dogs all over the world, what Jesus is saying here about sparrows, we could apply to our family dog, Leo. God knew about Leo. God knew details about Leo's life. And what the Bible says is that no sparrow falls to the ground apart from my Father in heaven, Jesus says, which means apart from the will of my Father in heaven. Even the life of a sparrow, even the life of a family dog like Leo, is known by God and is overseen by God. And the whole point of talking about birds and animals is to say, this is the kind of love God has, and he loves you, Jesus is saying to his apostles, to his disciples, and to us. God loves you more than you could even imagine. He knows details about you that you don't even know about yourself. Even all the hairs on your head are numbered by God. He is in control, and he also is a loving and caring God. So Jesus has started by saying, look, as big as your problems might be, the most important question, the biggest problem you have is, how will I stand before God at the end of all time? And then, having sort of pushed out any other anxiety with this bigger question, this bigger thing that really should concern us, Jesus has then said, and that God before whom you will stand at the end of all time, the one who has authority to destroy both body and soul in hell, he loves you and he knows the details of your life. And then he goes on to say that the next thing in verse 32. So everyone who acknowledges me before men, I also will acknowledge before my Father who is in heaven. But whoever denies me before men, I also will deny before my Father who is in heaven. So what's the next step of Jesus comforting his disciples in this moment of fear? It's to say, God has provided an advocate, one who will stand up for you in the very throne room of heaven. Jesus says, that's me. I'm the one who will acknowledge you before my Father in heaven if you acknowledge me. And what that means for his disciples in this assignment, this risky assignment that he's giving them to proclaim the kingdom and face opposition, is he saying, if you trust me, if you're willing to put all your trust in me and follow through on this assignment, if you acknowledge me before men, even hostile men who will mock you and even harm you, then I will acknowledge you before my Father in heaven. You know, there's really no comparison between those two offers kind of thing. Jesus says, if you're willing to acknowledge me before finite, mortal, limited people who are created by God just like you. I will acknowledge you before my limitless, uncreated, creator of all things, all-powerful, holy Father, who has absolute authority over the whole universe. There's just no comparison between those offers. So in a sense, Jesus calms the fears of his disciples by preaching them the gospel. You have a central question to answer in life, which is, how is my relationship with God? Can I stand before a holy God when everything is revealed? Jesus says everything that's hidden is going to be exposed. Everything that's been whispered is going to be shouted from the rooftops. Once the whole record of history, the whole record of your life is exposed, can you stand before a holy God and sort of be weighed in the balance? The answer for every person who's ever lived, other than Jesus, is no. I can't stand before God on the basis of my own moral record. I'm a sinner. I'm a rebel before God, a moral failure. And then Jesus says, but you know what? That God who has the authority to destroy both body and soul in hell, he loves you. He knows the intimate details of your life. And I am willing, Jesus says, to stand, to acknowledge you, to speak your name as one of my own before my Father in heaven. If you'll put your trust in me, if you'll stake your life on me and my promises. So Jesus comforts his disciples and he comforts us at a time of fear with the message of the gospel. And then he goes further. He started to introduce this idea that he is the great hope that his disciples have. He's the great hope that we have because he's the one who's willing to acknowledge us before a holy God, who's willing to stand up for us and call us one of his own. And then he goes on to say some things about how controversial he's going to be and how divisive, actually, Jesus is going to be. He says this, "Do not think that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I have not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to set a man against his father, and a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a person's enemies will be those of his own household." Wow. Those are strong words. And I think it's, first of all, helpful to say very clearly what Jesus isn't saying in these verses. He's not saying that it's necessary for us as his followers to be perpetrating physical violence. That's not what he means when he says that he's come to bring a sword. He's not talking about some sort of religious war. And he's also not saying that as followers of Jesus, it's okay for us to do things that would ruin our relationships with the people in our own families. That's not his message either. In fact, right at the end of his life, Jesus cares for his mother by making sure that she has someone to look after her. One of his own followers, John, is given the assignment of sort of adopting Mary as his mother in the moments when Jesus is dying. And the Bible's really clear. One of the Ten Commandments is honor your father and mother. So there's no question that Jesus, who said he came to fulfill the law, is teaching his disciples now that it's okay to trash your family relationships. What he is saying, though, is that if you are absolutely faithful to this belief that Jesus is Lord, and if you allow him to be the ultimate and final authority in your life, for many of us, that will result in challenges within our own family. There will be people who think we're taking our faith and this whole commitment to Jesus far too seriously. And people, maybe they'll be neighbors, maybe, and he emphasizes the idea of the members of our own family who might reject us because of that commitment that we have to Jesus. It's interesting as well that he says, he goes on to say in verse 37, "Whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me." That's an interesting way of Jesus putting it, that you're not worthy of me. And I think part of what he's saying here is you haven't really recognized who I am if you actually think that, you know, the most important relationship you have is with your mom, and next maybe with, you know, some other member of your family, and then with Jesus. You haven't really understood who I am. You're not worthy of me because you haven't seen who I truly am. Jesus is putting himself forward here as God. He's saying, I am able to be the highest priority in your life, the central relationship within your life. And some of us know what it's like to make a human relationship our one and single great hope. Maybe it's a spouse, a husband or wife. Maybe it's a friend. When we put that kind of pressure on another human being to kind of be our savior, it never works out very well. Jesus is saying, I am one in whom you can put that kind of trust. And if you haven't understood, Jesus says, that I am one who's different from any other relationship, you need to put me first, and I am worthy of being put first. And only when I'm placed first in your life do all the other relationships in your life fit in their proper place. And lastly, Jesus says, whoever does not take up his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. You know, it's kind of interesting. This reference in Matthew 10, verse 38, this reference to a cross, it's the first time in Matthew's gospel that a cross is mentioned. Jesus won't speak about his own death until Matthew chapter 16, I think it is. But here he talks about his followers taking up their cross. And that was very clearly him saying, being willing to die. And he says, if you're not willing to die, then you're not worthy of me. Wow. You know, if you have not fully committed yourself to me, you really have not understood who I am. If you haven't placed me as the first relationship in your life, you haven't understood who I am. If you're not willing to go all in and say, even if I die in order to keep my grasp on Jesus, that's okay, then you haven't really understood who I am. And then he makes this bold claim, whoever finds his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. That kind of sounds neat that Jesus says, if you lose your life for me, you'll find it. But is that just a platitude? Is that just something nice for Jesus to say? Or is that actually true? The first part of that, I think we can all relate to. A person who, you know, tries to find his life and loses it. Someone who makes life all about themselves, makes life all about, you know, getting everything they want. And in the course of time, by being that way, by maybe being really materialistic and by manipulating relationships to get what they want, they end up actually losing it all, like isolated, miserable, those kinds of things. So the first part that Jesus says in this verse makes sense, I think, to anyone from experience. But when Jesus says, whoever loses his life for my sake or her life for my sake will find it, let me just say, Jesus has absolute authority to say that. And that's because even though when he speaks about a cross here in Matthew chapter 10, and he's talking about the cross that his followers pick up, that's not the most important cross in the Bible. The cross that's at the center of the Bible story is the cross that Jesus himself took up, that he carried to Calvary, the cross that he was nailed on, the cross that he hung on, the cross that he died on. Jesus is able to say that if you are willing to lay down your life for me, you'll find it, because he has laid down his life for us. And he didn't just lay down his life. In John chapter 10, he says, I lay down my life to take it back up again. He defeated death for us. And so he absolutely can say, whoever is willing to lay down their life, and whether that's something we do spiritually in the sense of saying, Jesus, I give you everything of who I am, or whether for some of us that might even happen literally and we face the risk of physical death, Jesus is able to say to us, even if you die in me, if you die placing your trust in me, you will live, because Jesus himself has come. He has lived the life that we never could in perfect fellowship with his Father. He has died in our place to pay the penalty for our sin, and he's been raised again to life. And so he can tell us, trust me, take my hand, and I will take you right through the worst of life because I've been through it myself. I will take you right through the pain of death because I've done it myself, and I will take you into eternal life because I was raised from the dead. The way to have a fearless and focused life is to remember the truth of the gospel. Our greatest concern should be about our relationship with God. Can we stand before God at the end of all time? Do we recognize that this God we'll face loves us and that he's given us an advocate, one who will acknowledge us before his Father in heaven? And that advocate is Jesus. Even though he's divisive, even though not everyone will understand, will we treat him as he deserves? Make him first in our lives? Trust him completely with everything that we have? Will we take his offer that even if we face the worst, even if we face death, we don't need to be afraid? We've found life if we found Jesus. That makes us fearless. That makes us focused. And that turns us into really a joyful blessing to people around us, no matter what the circumstances are. So I hope you're encouraged by this, these words from the Bible. Look forward to meeting you in person. God bless you. And I hope the weather's as good on Sunday. I'm recording this on Friday. I hope the weather's really good there in Ottawa right now and that you can get out and enjoy the sunshine. God bless you.
Thanks again, everyone, for being with us. Trevor, thank you for preaching. Again, I hope that that sermon was a blessing and that it ministered to your heart. If you want to learn more about Southeast City Church, you can go to southeastcitychurch.ca. You can learn more about who we are and what we're about. You can listen to past sermons, check out our blog, what we've been up to. And there's actually a contact page there as well with a little connect form that you can fill out. So if you're new and you don't know us, don't know much about us, you can go there, you can fill out the connect form, submit it, and we will follow up with you as soon as we can. Southeast City Church family, thank you for tuning in. We miss you. We hope you're doing okay, you're holding up okay. We love you guys. We're praying for you guys that you grow closer to the Lord and closer to each other and closer to your neighbors in this season. Thanks again for being here. God bless and have a great week.